Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show, so stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.
Hello, friends, and welcome to The Point, the home services podcast that focuses on marketing and operational solutions to help you get better. Because if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Now, let's cut through the bullshit and get to the point.
To the Point listeners, what's going on? It's your boy, Cristiano, host of To the Point Home Services Podcast, along with my main man, Tall Paul. What's going on, my co-host?
Yano, brother, good to see you, man. Always a pleasure. I don't know when this will air, but this is coming off of actually seeing you a week ago and spending a week with you. I guess we called it brochal distancing out in the hills of Wyoming. So I'm refreshed. I'm excited about our guest today. And glad to be here, man, as always.
Yeah, man, we did brochal distance, and we actually kind of horseshoal distanced because we were out in the Grand Tetons, which, Paul, what does that mean?
Teton means breast of the earth, at least in Spanish. It's Wayahota. But Tetons means just like it sounds, Tetons.
Perfect. Okay, so...
You were blown away by that. You were like, who named it? Like, yeah. It actually had a name.
Actually, was brilliant. But we went riding on an incentive trip. A few of us gentlemen from Rhino, and it was pretty amazing to be out in the middle of nowhere with no cell service and no Wi-Fi until it was scary. So I experienced nomophobia, which means I had no mobile phone. So it's a real thing, and it happens. Okay, let's get after it. So to be aware of our time and to be courteous to our guest, who I am super excited to have on board. We have lots of mutual customers, been in the business. He's like an OG in the home services space. Great guy. We have a lot of similarities on our characteristics and just how we operate our businesses, and just a good dude, man. And a lot of mutual customers who have said a lot of great things too, which is holds a lot of validity to it. But I want to introduce our guest. He is actually on the East Coast in Jersey. Now, is that considered North Jersey, or is that still South Jersey? That's South Jersey still, right? That's North Jersey. Where are you at?
I'm like West Jersey.
Okay. So like 40, like 40, like you're north of Cherry Hill, like, which is, yep. Okay, whatever. So anyhow, I'm going to get into
up in the sticks.
Up in the sticks. My wife's family lives in Jersey. So,
Most people think that Jersey is Newark. They just think Newark is the, you know, extends everywhere. But Jersey's got rural areas and lots of pretty places to do things like ride bikes.
Oh Lord.
Farm animals.
Yeah.
Wait
a
second.
Farm animals here. A lot of corn, cows.
Yep. Well, listen, I'm not opposed to that since I grew up with that stuff. So our guest, man, he's been in the business what, like a quarter of a decade. Is that fair?
Yeah. I haven't been able to find a better job. So, I mean, I've just been sticking with it.
Makes perfect sense. Now,
Chris, quarter of a decade is 2.5 years.
I said decade. What's a century? Century?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep. Quarter of a century.
Close enough.
You know what?
It feels like that.
I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night, and that's bullshit because I didn't know. Okay. I thought I knew. I thought I was going to be a mathematician. Anyhow, so 25 years in the graphic design biz, the brand biz, I would like to say. Dude, you wrote 3 books on logo design and branding, and I had no idea of it. So I'm just now finding that out. That's pretty impressive. I've never written a book. I've only read 3 books. So you've written as many as I've read. The name of your company is changed. You essentially did a rebrand, which makes perfect sense to be an advocate of it. But you've worked with what, over 1,500 brands, over 500 of those being in the or around 500 of those being in the HVAC and plumbing space. But you've done a lot of stuff all over the world too, which is pretty remarkable. You have some of the coolest wraps I have ever seen in the home services space, and again, a lot of those are mutual customers of ours. You've been crushing that game for a long time now. Lots of lots of awards. I think it's like something like 25 awards over the last, you know, 5 years. Mr. Dan Antonelli on the show today is gonna show us how to get it done in the brand game. And what I heard, actually not what I heard, what I saw when I went to the website was something odd. When I went to the Kick Charge website, I saw something odd, and I was like, what in the hell is that person doing riding a damn bicycle in the middle of the office? And then I learned that you and Tall Paul have something in common, and I promised Paul I would give you guys a few minutes to talk about it, but you're both avid cyclists. And okay, so ready and go.
Okay, so I'm super excited to have you on today because I wanted to talk bikes for the entire segment. However, Chris gave me 120 seconds and I've just used 10 of them. So I want to focus on one element of your cycling that you just did a week or so ago. You climbed, 15,000 feet over the course of, 9 or 10 hours and 90 degrees? To give someone an example, I can't even put that into context, because if you're not a cyclist, it sounds stupid. But if you are a cyclist, it sounds even more stupid, because that's really, really hard to do. So tell me about that. Tell me about that experience. Set it up for our listeners.
Yeah. So, you know, there's no racing anymore here in New Jersey. So, you know, I raced the first week in March, and then everything was shut down after. So, you know, you just start getting bored with goals and, you know, what are you doing out there on the bike? And normally through the whole summer I'm racing. So I found out about this thing called Everesting, and Everesting is climbing, you know, up a single hill as many times as it takes to get to the top of the same altitude as Mount Everest. So I did a half Everest, which is about 14,000 something feet. And I did a little bit extra just to make sure I didn't go under it, because you get like certified by the website and everything like that. So I started at 5 a.m. and then I was done by 3 p.m. or so. I had a couple little breaks, but it was awful, and brutal. As soon as I got off the bike, I was just like, there's no way I'm going to do a full one. And it was about 3 days later, I started thinking about it, and now I'm just starting to lay the foundations about maybe doing a full attempt in maybe October when it's not 95 degrees. So a full one would probably be about 18 or 19 hours or so to do it. So I don't know. Well, I'm still thinking about it, but it was awful.
I like how you're wired. So the thing about cycling is it was only a mile long segment,
mile
right?
Long. Yeah.
So you climb for a mile, which is brutal, every pedal stroke, right? And then you ride downhill for a mile, but it's not enough time to recover. So your legs are still fried by the time you're starting again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 41 repeats. So, you know, it was tough. The last five laps were just bad. And at lap 31, I nearly bagged it because I was just so overheated and I couldn't get cool. And I had to just get in the car and turn the air on and just chill for a little bit. And then I had a buddy come pace me up the last five laps who made sure I didn't die on the way up, which was kind of cool. So,
how good was all the food you ate the rest of the day though?
You'd be surprised. I didn't really eat that much. I actually felt really sick after.
Yeah.
So I didn't have too much, and it took me a couple of days to really kind of find my bearing again. I had dropped about 5 or 6 pounds during the course of that ride. Took a little while to get back into swing of things, but I'm back. I took, you know, kind of a recovery week last week, and you know, I started getting back out the beginning of last week, and you know, still a little sore actually. So
sounds miserable.
Well, I love it. I get it. And Chris, thank you for indulging me for 2 minutes. I'll let you take it back on the rails.
Okay.
We'll talk offline.
Well, that sounds miserable, but I can understand how it's rewarding when it's all done. That's part of the mental piece of things that I love, is the challenge like that. So, in addition to cycling, Dan is the president and creative director for Kick Charge Creative, which I'm certain there's a handful of our listeners who know exactly who he is and are probably customers. So we have Dan on the show today to share with us about branding. And if you hear the word brand and you feel like you want to turn this thing off right now, don't. You're making a massive mistake, because it has never been more important than it is right now. And if COVID exposed anything, it's exactly that. If you didn't have a brand, you're in deep shit. You really had to pivot and do some things. So I want to get into it, and I want, Dan, if you would, one, welcome. And I want you to go right into just a little bit, I think, define to you like what brand is, because I've actually heard brand explained in multiple different ways. Now, you're in our space. You're in the home services space. What is brand, and how do you define it?
Yeah, and I think that's true that you hear so many different sort of definitions of it. You know, brand is what people say about your business behind your back. A brand is, you know, if people were describing you to someone else, how would they talk about your company? That's all part of it. You know, I look at brand almost like a wheel. That's the easiest analogy I can make, is that it's a wheel. And then, you know, of course, I'm a cyclist, so I've got to go back to the wheel. But the center of that wheel is your logo. And then the spokes that go outward are all the touch points that integrate your logo. So you have brand voice, you have, you know, web, you have truck wraps, uniforms for the guys, business cards, stationery, brochures, social media. So all those things going around the wheel really comprise your actual brand. So that whole wheel is kind of like your brand, right? So I always like to think about too, when you talk about, you know, when you don't have a solid brand, right? Well, what happens? So just imagine that your hub in the center of that wheel is all jacked up, right? Now that wheel doesn't turn the right way, you know, like it'll still kind of go around in a circle, but it's not spinning efficiently, right? So if you don't get that hub dialed in, then everything else that integrates that hub doesn't flow properly. It doesn't work properly. And that's where you see, you know, a lot of companies that just don't get that hub right, and they're spending so much time trying to get that wheel to turn, and instead you got to go back and fix that hub, otherwise it's never going to turn right.
Yeah, how fitting you use hub and spoke.
You know, if it fits, you know.
Yeah, it's actually a really good analogy, and I think one that you can relate to regardless. So that's pretty solid. I'm a good visual guy, so that gives me a good visual on how that works. But brand is really a foundation. Like, you got to have a good brand. I got to ask this question, and it's not on what we had discussed, but I got to know because I heard it last night. What's your 2 cents on people who use their initials as part of their brand or part of their logo?
Well, I'm probably going to piss off a lot of people, but it's just awful. It's the worst brand strategy ever. And it's the hardest. And the reason why it's bad is because, you know, the best brands are going to evoke a visual or a positive expectation of deliverable to go with it. So if you say I'm from, you know, TP Plumbing and Heating, Well, what do I assume about that?
Toilet paper.
Do I assume you're honest? I'm going to show up on time. You're going to do the right thing. Or if I go to, you know, Expert Air, well, they got to be good. They're called Expert Air. So why not lead in with a positive brand promise instead of requiring all your other marketing to try to get people to understand what those initials mean? And so, you know, when we get brands, and listen, I've branded hundreds of companies with initials. They're just really hard to get sticky in people's heads because there's no connection to make. I can't make a visual to go with TP Plumbing. Like, well, what am I going to do? You know, so those are typically the hardest ones. And they also don't speak to any expectation of a deliverable. Like, I don't know what I'm going to get. I have to form that impression over time, over other advertising. But, you know, to me, the best brands, as soon as I see the brand, I see the name, I already feel something and I expect something. You know, that's the one thing too that people don't understand is brands are meant, you know, especially in home service, they're really meant to counter bias. You know, that's the whole key. Like, they already think that they may get screwed by a contractor because they're afraid. Like, listen, you could go in there and you could say, you know, hey, you need a whole new condenser or you need a $10 transistor. I don't know. That's not my world. Like, I'm the homeowner. Like, I got to trust you, right? So they're already worried about who's coming, who's going to fix their problem, who's going to do it right, who's going to be honest. And so brands are all meant to really counter that bias and to really speak to that expectation of a deliverable. So I don't know anything at all about you except what I've seen online, on your truck, the uniforms from your guys, the business card you just handed me. I'm already forming a whole bunch of impressions about you. Why not control that conversation, right? Why not have them believe something about your business before you even ring the doorbell. Like the guys we work with and the same guys you guys work with, when they ring that doorbell, they kill it, right? They're awesome. They're doing the right thing, right? But let's control that perception before they even get there. Let's have them believe that you guys are going to do an amazing service to my home before they even get there. And that's really all what brands are meant to do, the good ones.
Yeah. And perception is reality. So you got to get it right up front and before you even have any contact with them. And like you said, a brand can make you feel an emotion, and emotion will make them take action. So it's just a part of the process. But I also believe that there's a lot of contractors, you know, because a lot of them are technicians who stepped out, did their own thing, and they don't really know. So, but then they get afraid to change that, right? Like it's like, hey, I've already got this. I've had it for 15 years. It's been D&L or D&H or whatever, air conditioning and plumbing. And then they get afraid to make that change. It's just because they didn't know they made a poor brand choice. They just made the decision based off of the information that they have. So now they get to the point where they're like, okay, man, I just saw this post of, you know, of this company's wrap that looks so sick. And, oh, you know, KickCharge did it. Man, I'd like to make a change, but I'm scared to death. Like, what do you say to that guy or gal that comes to you and says that to you?
You know, we've done so many renamings from initial base companies, and we've never seen that transition result in a decrease in sales or revenue or anything like that. It's always resulted in something much more positive. The way you roll it out, there's a method to rolling out a new brand and a rename, letting the customers know why the change is taking place. But we've just never seen an instance where that's been a mistake. But to your point, you know, listen, you know, old logos, old brands, old names, and things that don't actually work in their favor, they're like a warm blanket, you know, and the clients are like, well, I've been doing this for so long and it's been working. Why would I ever change it? And it's sort of the wrong idea to think about. It's more like, well, imagine if you had a better brand, like how much more you'd be killing it right now. Like you're working against all these things. You're working against maybe a bad name, maybe a bad logo, you know, and then all that stuff being integrated on all your marketing channels aren't delivering the things that you want. So what do? You bang more money at it. You keep throwing more money at it. You're like, okay, well, I'm going to increase my budgets. I'm going to spend more money. Okay, well, dude, like why not just fix what's wrong with it first? And I guarantee you all those other things are just going to work so much better. We've done so many renames and after the launch, you look at 6 months after and, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, I wish I had done this sooner. You know, so we just don't ever really see that decision come back to haunt it, especially if it's something like an initial base brand. You know, people just don't remember it. And then you're really fighting for that, to have them remember your name when they actually need to call you for service.
Yeah. So what I heard you say was that, I heard you say never, but more often than not, it's always a positive, you know, turn. Like, and I've had to go through a rebrand before as a company. So for the first, anyway, who's listening for the first time, I'm also the CEO of a company called Rhino Strategic Solutions, which is a digital marketing company for the trades since 2008. It's all I've done. But I had to go through a rebrand as well. And I was afraid to death of thinking like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm 5 years in on this company, I need to go through a rebrand. It just made sense for me. When I pulled the trigger, I was amazed on actually how well it went and how well received it was and how easy it was. It was just in my own head. So I've been through it. You went through
and
it.
And we have too. You know, I changed the name of this company after 22 years, right? And you also talk about, well, why do you make a change? So our previous name was called Graphic Designs, and that originated from when we did graphic design work, and we also did a lot of design and truck lettering. This is like 25 years ago, 22 years ago, right? But it, first of all, it wasn't who we were anymore. Second of all, the name was like, well, we don't really do graphic design. I mean, we do, but not really. And then we don't do any sign work. We do design work. So it's like, well, why do we still call this? It doesn't capture the energy. It doesn't capture who we are today. So I had to take a hard look at myself too and just say, you know what? This isn't who we are. And so I went through the process as well, completely redoing everything. And listen, for us, I mean, the implications were substantial, right? I mean, the website, redoing our own website, all the marketing materials, the collateral. I mean, there was so many things that we had to do. Now, granted, that's what we do. So like, but still, it was a huge undertaking. For us to go through it. But oh my God, 3 years, like I just saw, you know, my Facebook memories that it was 3 years ago yesterday that we renamed and rebranded. And like, oh my God, it's been like, We've had such great growth since then. People know our name. They think it makes sense. They think it's cool. They think it captures the energy that we bring to the table. So it was such a great thing that we did. I'm so glad I went through it. But I do have a deeper appreciation for it as well with the clients that we work with, to know that they have a connection with it. And I'm not trying to diminish that connection, but I do have a deeper appreciation for their affinity to what they've had, right? Because they've been using it for a long time. I had the same thing, 22 years I was using it. But I said, you know what, if I want to take this company to where I want to go, I can't get there with what I'm doing currently. So I had to pivot and make a change as well.
Yeah. So I think that, it's sometimes you have to do it. But again, you just don't be afraid of it. So if you're listening and you think you've been thinking about doing a rebrand, don't wait. Again, I saw, unfortunately, having been in this business a long time, when this whole COVID stuff happened, and it's still kind of like going on. I mean, I'm in Arizona, so like I'm in a hot spot, right? But man, I've seen so many businesses that didn't have a great brand impacted by it. So don't do nothing, do something, make a change. And as we go through this, you'll learn some more tactics on how to go about it, you know, because, Dan's really helpful in at least giving advice. And like most people we've had on here that are willing to help. And even if you aren't in a spot where you can work with Dan or another branding agency, anything like that, you can at least get some tips on how to start, you know, preparing to make that change and things of that nature. So, Paul, you have any questions for from a man, Dan?
Yeah, Dan, I would imagine that you're evaluating contractors' brands, you know, several every day or every week, right? People come to you and they say, what can you do? What would you recommend? Yeah. That's a big part of what you do. Mm-hmm. What are the things you see that are reoccurring bad things, negative? What kind of patterns do you see on that side? And then what are the elements of a good brand? Like, where do you try to take people? And you can start at the hub. You can work your way down the spokes, however you want to address that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, so many people do contact us and we're blessed to be well known and to have a lot of people very interested in what we do. But you see, you know, they see our work and then sometimes they just want a really cool truck wrap. And then they send their logo and they're like, you know, we really love what you do. Here's our logo. And, you know, you look at that and you're just like, I can't do it. Like I can't deliver what you're asking me to do with that logo because there's so many deficiencies in either how it's executed. Maybe there's legibility issues. Maybe the way the art is rendered is amateurish. Maybe it's just clip art. So you see, you know, guys that are interested in sometimes just even getting a really effective truck wrap, and then what they send me will never work. And it's at that point I'll have that conversation and say, listen, like, I'm not going to take your money to do a wrap that I know is destined to deliver a poor ROI. Like, I just don't want to be responsible for that. And, you know, I'm sure someone else, you know, may be willing to work with that. And that's cool, but it's just not who we are. So you see issues like that where you just know fundamentally when that brand needs to be executed in that particular space that it's not going to function well. And then, you know, as far as other things you're evaluating again, like, so they're coming to me with something and then I'm forming an immediate impression because that's what I do. But like, so is Mrs. Smith or Mr. Jones, who is also looking at your truck. So what impression is that brand delivering, and making sure that that impression is positive and sticky. So like, even for you guys, obviously, you know, in the digital space, like, would you rather your clients need to rely on someone typing in heating repair Phoenix? Or would you rather them just typing in their name already because they already know the name? You know, like, obviously that's how you win the battle on the streets. And that's kind of the connection that we see is, you know, for the guys that we rebrand, we reintroduce the new logo on their vehicles, you know, online, et cetera, that now they win the battle online as well, much easier because people know their name now. And it's not a question of relying on Google or being at the top of Google. Like, obviously you still got to do that. I'm not saying that suddenly you can eliminate SEO or pay-per-click or any of those other things, but that's really where you want to go. So what we see is guys that invest in this and do it right actually do not change their advertising spends, but suddenly revenue is up 30, 40, 50, 60% in a year with changing nothing except the brand. So that tells me that the ROI is substantially impacted across all the channels when you do that brand correctly, you know, from the first place.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I think. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, not a lot of people who do branding want to talk ROI because it can be hard to measure. So has it been your experience that clients will make this move, rebrand, start at the hub, work their way out, and then ROI comes quickly after that?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a page on our website that has like 30 examples mm-hmm. and the timelines as far as revenue increases post rebrand. Now, I'm not going to say I'm going to take 100% responsibility of increasing someone's business, but I will say, and those clients will speak to it, that the brand was the thing that started it all, that made everything yeah. work better. So we're very diligent about recording revenue at the time that a brand launches and then looking at it 6 months down the road or a year down the road and seeing what has changed. And we're also very cognizant of, well, what else changed as far as your advertising budget? But if your advertising budget remained flat, then really what happened here? How did we suddenly grow, you know, 30, 40, 50% in 6 months? Like, would you tell me how that happened? Like, you know, So looking at those numbers, we also can do hard data as it relates to vehicle wraps as one of the other methods of measuring ROI. So you could look at the inbound call tracking, right? If the CSRs are recording inbound lead sources, and you could look at a year prior to a rebrand and a year after rebrand. I'll give you one quick example. Gem Plumbing Heating in Rhode Island, a really big contractor with, like, you know, 100 vans, we rebranded them. They wrapped 25% of their fleet and experienced four times the number of phone calls post rebrand a year later.
Awesome.
So that's only with 25%. They got four times the number of phone calls with this, with only 25% of the fleet wrapped. So you want to extrapolate that out. That's 16X, right? I'm sorry, not 16. It would be 12X, but still, it's a huge amount of our, you know, increased revenue attributed directly to that rebrand. So, you know, we very carefully are tracking that information to make sure that we know that it's working.
Yeah. Are truck wraps usually the first element that your customers want to go after? Once you, yeah. Let's say you've done a complete rebrand, truck wraps are first.
Yeah. Yeah. Generally it's truck wraps, stationary, and then we'll look at collateral. We'll look at web and things like that typically, but definitely the trucks to me are the single most important implementation of that brand. And if you don't get that piece right, you're really missing an opportunity within the community. You know, you really want those trucks as you're driving by, or they're parked on your neighbor's lawn. You want to leave a really solid impression and make each impression count there.
So I can attest to, because we're only digital marketing, we do know those customers of ours that actually have a good brand, perform better. It's not even a question. Yeah. Not everybody's in that position. So, like, you got to get there, and they'll have to rely heavily on other direct response sources to bring in volume. Since we're on the topic of wraps, let's just talk about that for a second. So how do you go about figuring out a brand strategy for these wraps for any, like, do you have these specific things that you say, hey, if your focus is we're going to wrap these vehicles, what are the things that these guys should focus on? Because you've done a bunch. It's almost like when we have to build websites, and we've built thousands of them for the same types, the same industry for a decade, they got to get creative, like, and start figuring out new things. There's some of the same principles in place that we're utilizing, but you got to continue to evolve. Like, what are the key things that you look at if you're like, hey, we're going to do this rebrand and we're going to wrap the truck. These are the things you want to think about when you're wrapping a vehicle. Are there anything like, did you guys have any like things like that you had, boxes you checked that you, or principles that you use when creating a wrap?
So the most important piece, first of all, is just to make sure you have a good brand that's worth getting a wrap for. So if you don't have a good brand, then you can't go move on to step one. So you always got to make sure you've got the right foundation there. But before you even get to that point, what we do when we develop a new brand is we look at the competitive space. Okay. So there's market analysis that we do where we look at all, let's say their top 5 to 10 competitors. And I want to see what all those brands look like. And then I also want to see what colors they're using and what brand strategies they're deploying. Are they using mascots? Are they using clean and modern? You know, what colors are they trying to own in their particular space? And then from that point, really then think about, well, how do we develop something that will be disruptive and unique in your space? Okay. So we want to own our brand colors. We want to make sure that when they see these vans and they're colored a certain way, they only think about our brand, not five of the other guys. So like if you're heating and air, typically I want to avoid red and blue, right? Because it's so popular within the trades to have a red and blue van or red, white, and blue van if you're HVAC. So I can't own those color schemes. So I'm trying to think about ways in which I can own a strategy that is different than what everyone else is doing in your particular market. And then the other part too, like we just mentioned earlier, is thinking about even beyond just that part of the strategy, but what kind of story can we tell that would be unique in your space? Is there anything about your culture that makes your company very different? You know, even like the branding that we did for Ken at Gettle, talking about the boy holding the flashlight and how that story was integrated in the rest of their marketing. So I try to look at it not just as far as developing this really cool truck wrap and this really cool brand, but how is this story now of this brand going to be told throughout all these other channels? So definitely color is super important on the vehicles. Legibility is so important. That's where you see guys really, really miss the mark with legibility. Like the thing rolls by and you can't read it. I don't know who it's for, you know, and they think that putting more and more stuff onto these wraps makes them more eye-catching. And it's actually the opposite. It takes away from your brand. You know, we preach against photos. We don't think photos belong on truck wraps. Like, okay, you're a heating and air guy and you throw a condenser unit and, you know, it's on a green grass and a blue sky. Well, terrific. You sell heating and air conditioning equipment. Who are you? I don't know because I can't see your name because I've got this big ass condenser unit on the side of your van. So like those don't represent your brand. They represent what you do, which, you know, I get is important, but if your brand should be telling that story, not these images of people with a guy hanging off the back of the van and you know, the generic technician guy, like all that stuff is just blanding, right? That's what I call blanding. So don't bland, like just brand instead. Blanding is like what everybody else is doing. And the irony is that the stuff that we do, I think sometimes it makes guys uncomfortable because they're so afraid to disrupt, right? It's so easy to do blanding, right? It's so easy to say, hey, I'm going to get a cool logo. And yeah, it's pretty cool. And I think, you know, I know what logos should look like for heating and air guys. And they get kind of comfortable with it. And I'm trying to push them outside that box and say, dude, like, I don't want us to look like what anyone else is doing or has thought of. I want us to be really different in your space. And you got to get them used to that idea. Because sometimes they're like, you know, their instinct is to sort of curl up on that. You know, they're like, oh, like it's so different. I'm like, yeah, that's why we're doing it, because it's so different. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned mascots. What's your take on mascots?
You know, mascots, again, are going to be largely dictated by the service area and the mm-hmm. competitive landscape. You know, I'll go into certain markets where we do the analysis and, you know, 9 out of 10 competitors all have mascots. And if that's the case, I really don't want to go in that same direction because it's going to be very difficult to do something that feels really unique in that space. And there's certain areas where it's just weird, where there's a heavy concentration of that type of approach. Mm-hmm. And then you go in others where there's none. It's just bizarre. Like, I don't really know sort of why that sort of concentration happens. But it's almost like it seems silly even for those other companies that are doing similar brand strategies. Like, why would you want to do something that looks like what everyone else is doing in your space? It doesn't matter what they're doing in other states and things like that. It's more about what's happening right in your own community. So some guys are like, oh, you know, mascots are overplayed. And yeah, there's certainly a lot of mascot brands, and we've probably done, you know, a few hundred of them. But it's largely, you know, going to be driven by what's actually happening in that particular space. Like I said, if I see a bunch in the same area, then I don't want to really do another one and add to it.
Are there other nuances as you look across the country that might be, you know, more important in the Pacific Northwest or not so important in New York, New Jersey? Like, do you see any differences there with brand strategy?
Sometimes, like, depending on the name and their location, you may be able to do something that's more thematic in nature. Like, we did a brand for a company called Seaside that was near the Delaware shore. So we, you know, kind of did a mascot that is a turtle holding a wrench. And then I did another one for a client that's in the Jersey Shore called the Shore Guys. And it's a guy on a surf, you know, he's on a surfboard, and the whole truck wrap has got kind of that vibe. And a couple of things we did in Orange County, California, that I don't think would play well in Middle America. So when you get a little bit more thematic in nature, and certainly when the names are more thematic, then they may be a little bit more of a regional strategy that makes sense more so in that particular region than in others.
You right. did.
What about recruiting? Any impact on recruiting, or, you know, people always talk about having a hard time finding candidates. Have you had any good stories there?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And that's something too, where, you know, you see a lot of guys lamenting, oh, it's so hard to find people, like no one, I can't get anyone. And then you go look at sort of the image that they're projecting outwardly, and you sort of say, well, I don't know that I would want to work for you either. So what you outfit the guys in, how nice the trucks look, all those things play into recruitment. You know, do you look like a company that you want to work for? And that part, I think, is really important. You know, how you present yourself to your prospective employees is largely driven by how that brand is perceived to them. You know, I bet you that Ken, you know, even at 600 or 700 employees at Gettle, does not have the same recruitment problems that some of these other companies have that just don't have a really solid brand.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Ken, and I want to talk about him for a second, because, you know, a lot of people know Ken, and Ken has a really big personality, and people know Ken and they know what Ken's about. But you almost don't connect Ken with Gettle to a degree. Gettle's brand kind of stands on its own. So like Ken can say whatever he wants online in a small group and it, you know, whatever. But Gettle stands in and of itself, where I see a lot of big personality owners who can't separate themselves from the brand, if that makes sense. Yeah. But you just made me think of that. Like yeah. Gettle is such a strong brand, yeah, obviously.
For sure.
I want to talk a little bit about disruption. So you've mentioned, and I've heard you mention this in the past, about disruption as a brand strategy is, you know, something that it makes sense to you and it works for you. Generally speaking, I find contractors to be conservative in this area. Why are so many companies afraid to disrupt? And, you know, what works? What are some good examples of that?
Yeah, I think they're just very comfortable. And when you're advocating something that feels a little alien to them, they get a little scared about it. And I think it's ironic, because I think, you know, 10 years ago, I would have had a harder time getting some of these, you know, sort of crazy brand ideas that I had launched without having the depth of experience and being able to showcase that it's okay to be disruptive and it's okay to do something that doesn't feel quite so natural right now. And that, you know, it's going to work. So you definitely do see that, you know, it's almost like, again, like that warm blanket. They see what everyone else is doing, and they think that that's the way that they should do it. Instead of like looking outward and saying, you know what, like if everyone is zigging, then I really should zag and go opposite of what everyone else is doing. Otherwise, I'm just sort of running in the same direction and not necessarily doing anything that's distinctive in the approach. And the other thing too is, like, most guys do not really have a brand, right? Maybe they have a logo or something like that. But that logo is not infused in the rest of the channels properly. And there's no unique voice. And listen, you guys, when you guys write a website for somebody, you know, when you've got someone that has something unique to say about what they deliver versus someone who's, there is no real distinction in what they deliver. So how do you write about something like that that's unique? But like, if you have a brand for the shore guys and they're on a surfboard, well, dude, like the whole website can reflect that voice and you could integrate that in kind of a fun way. And to me, I think you got to think so much about how those stories are crafted. And you know, everyone could, you know, we could all do these really cool websites, right? But Mrs. Smith is probably going to go to 1, 2, and 3 maybe, right? So if she's looking at these three companies and the wording on all three websites sounds identical, well then, what's, who do I pick at that point? Is it just the lowest cost? Who's going to show up the fastest? You know, how are we showing her that what you provide is different and unique? And I think that that's the part too where guys just don't get it. They're just putting out the same exact messaging, and there's nothing compelling that consumer to choose you over the other person.
100%.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you mentioned websites, so I want to make a quick comment. You know, obviously, Rhino Strategic, we build websites, plenty of them for our customers. And we've done plenty of websites for clients who've come to us with a brand that you have created. And what's interesting is you can put, you know, a dealer standard, I say a contractor standard brand next to your brand, build the same website using the same designers. And one looks like it is a custom $50,000 website. And the other one looks like it's a template. And it was the same. And it's all because of brand. As one spoke of the wheel, it makes our job easier, which is going to make our job with Google easier, which is going to make the, it's just, it has a cascading effect on the entire business. So we just did one for you, Woodward, up in
For Scott. Yeah.
Yeah, with Scott up in Oregon. And I keep, poor guy's gonna have so many hits from his website outside of his service area because I'm just so proud of it. And I think our design team did an awesome job, but look what we were starting with. Yeah. Like it was amazing. So we'll have to put that in the show notes. Chris, did you want to add something?
Yeah, there? Yeah. So and I actually it already did. So and Scott will tell you the same thing. So that brand crushed it. So I also want to say two quick things to go back because Paul railroaded questions like now, I've never seen Paul before. That's okay. They were very thoughtful, Paul. but you crushed it on Bueller. I thought Bueller was where is that at? Where is he? Is he in,
he's in Jacksonville, Florida.
That's it. Jacksonville.
Yeah.
So that was awesome. Then he wrapped his boat with it, which I thought was super cool.
That's right.
So he, good, man.
Boat, what does his boat say? It's like Bueller's day off or something.
Yeah, Bueller's day off. So friggin' perfect, man. That so was good. Awesome. But like, most people know Ferris Bueller, right? And they get the reference. And that was like, I thought that was super creative and so fitting, you know, like it works in that area. It works really
well. And that was a rename too. You know, he had Air Source America was his name for 10 years. Relatively flat growth, you know, incremental, but, you know, after that, like, it's just been lights out, you know, it's just been awesome. He, you know, he walks into a store and you know, just wearing a logoed shirt and they're, oh, you're the guy from Bueller, you're Bueller. Oh my God, I see your trucks all over, you know?
Yep.
And that's one of the things too, I want to say too, that comment, right? I see your trucks all over. Guys often use that as a reason to say, well, I'm not going to rebrand, right? But remember, it's not a question of just saying that they see your trucks all over. It's what does that impression deliver each time you see it? That's really the important thing, right? Because you can make your trucks purple and pink,
that's
right?
Good.
You're driving around, everybody say, oh man, I see your purple and pink trucks all over. Cool. But what does it say about my expectation of a deliverable from you is really the important question we're trying to have control over. You know, so you can do something that's eye-catching that still delivers a positive brand promise. So don't get confused by saying, oh my God, you know, oh, my customers say they see their trucks all over. Well, that's great. But what does it say about you is really the other part of the question, right? Yeah. Does it say that you're a professional, that you're honest, that you're gonna show up on time, you're gonna do the right thing? Is it communicating those aspects? Because if it's not, then it's only doing half the job then.
Yeah.
Dan, do you ever find it that contractors have a hard time delivering the promise? So to give you an example, let's say someone says, hey, we're, you know, integrity and value, affordable, whatever those are. And then do you ever worry that they don't deliver on that? And then how does that deteriorate the brand?
Absolutely. And you know, part of what we do is we try to research a bit about the companies that are asking us to do work for them. You know, we had a client once that wanted us to rebrand them and, you know, a quick review on Yelp and their business practices made me feel really uncomfortable with the idea of presenting something that wasn't going to be true, essentially. So basically delivering a lie, and I'm not going to do that. You know, so we try to do our due diligence, make sure that they really are delivering a great service and a great product. They just don't look like they're delivering a great product and a great service. Right. So you marry those two things up and then it's lights out. But yeah, you're only going to get so far after you ring that doorbell, you're not doing the right thing, then no brand eventually is going to be able to overcome that hurdle.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you have integrity is what you're saying. That's what I heard loud and clear. It's not a bad characteristic of a company or a human being. So I want to say this, when we were talking about, you know, making shirts or hats or merchant, you know, like merch, I will say that, and I'm going to stand up on a soapbox for a second. It has been said numerous times that Rhino has the quote unquote dopest merch. Okay. That was an actual statement made. Well, not only by, one of our employees who said that was one of the positive things he loved about working here was he was proud to wear our stuff on it. But, I don't know, Paul, but if you've noticed recently and over the last year, we've been sending out a ton of swag to a lot of people who've been asking for merch, man. So I like the idea of thinking is a logo something you're proud of to wear on your sleeve? Is your brand something you're proud of to wear on your chest? Or, you know, that, like my kids, you know, I've got from 21 to 5, 20 to 5, sorry, she's not 21 yet. But they like our gear because it's got a cool, like it's got a really cool brand on it. So, and that's something to think about is, you know, be proud of it. I love that our employees really love our merchandise. Like that makes me super proud that they're proud to wear it. And that feels good. And that's a you know, something that, you know, it seems so simple, but to me, it means a lot. And the fact that our customers like say it like is super cool. So, man, make a brand that your kids are proud to wear. So I got to bring this thing in. Okay. Cause we're getting super short on time. I want to do a couple quick things and then we'll wrap. I want you, if you wouldn't mind,
no pun intended.
Yes. Then we're going to wrap. Nice catch, Paul. What does it look like if somebody wants to come and work with Dan? Cause I know that there's, like cost is all over the place and it all depends on what you do and the things that you do, in addition to just creating the actual logo itself, but like quickly kind of what is a high level of, you know, or a ballpark on what it costs to do work with Dan Antonelli and KickCharge?
Yeah. I mean, certainly it varies. You know, most of the companies are coming to us generally between, you know, looking to get the vehicle and the brand done initially. And generally that's going to be, you know, kind of in the ballpark of around 10,000 or so, depending on what things are added to that.
Sure. Yep.
And certainly costs are all over the place. You know, and the only thing I would say and just recommend everyone is just make sure you're dealing with a professional. Like if you can't use us, I mean, obviously we'd love to work with you, but just know who you're hiring. You know, there's a lot of chatter about using online companies and crowdsourcing your logo and your brand. Just know that those types of sources can be perilous. You know, there's been thefts. I mean, I've probably had about 50 or so of our brands stolen and resold on those sites to people who don't know that it's stolen. And then they go wrap 3 vehicles and put it on their website and put on their uniforms. And then they, you know, we find out about it because a lot of people know our work and they're like, hey, this dude stole your logo. And I'm right. Like, yeah, great. So, you know, the cease and desist go out or the damage demands go out and, you know, all that stuff is thrown in the garbage. So just make sure whoever you're hiring, you know, don't use clip art in your brand. Another big mistake because you can't trademark clip art. That means the guy next door to you literally can use the same exact logo and you have no recourse against that. So original art is super important. And just make sure that, you know, they stand behind what they're doing. Like the problem with the crowdsourcing thing too, is like, let's say they sold you something that was stolen and then you go do it. You think you're going to be able to recoup your losses from the guy overseas and he's going to pay to rewrap all your trucks from the stolen logo that he sold to you. So, you know, just be aware of some of the, you know, the pitfalls that can happen. I'm not saying it happens all the time. Some stuff happens fine, you know, but it's also a little bit different, you know, as far as doing strategy and really understanding the market and also how that logo needs to live on all the other platforms is also the other challenge. And most guys don't really understand that. It's like, you know, maybe it'll look okay on a truck, but it's going to look like crap on your website, or you'll never be able to get it embroidered or et cetera. So, you know, we approach these things trying to figure out holistically how this whole brand has to live in all these other channels.
Yeah. And so if somebody wants to get a hold of you too, it's not like, even if they don't, you know, even if they just need to understand what to do, what to ask for, what to think about. I know that you and your team are open to having a conversation, even if they don't end up being able to do business with KickCharge Creative.
Absolutely. So I mean, I help a lot of people too. They'll send me a sketch or they'll post something on the owners groups on Facebook and, you know, it's a truck wrap and, you know, I'm always happy to give feedback. The one thing I hate to see is I hate to see guys, you know, essentially throw away money on a really bad idea. Right. And if I could lend some support or some insight on sort of, hey, you know what, if you just did this and move this over here and change the size of this, it'll be 10 times more effective. Like I'm happy to do that as well.
So what's the best way that our listeners can get in touch with you, or what's the best way? I mean, obviously the website, if you want to share that, but like what is some other contact information that they can get a hold of you?
Yeah, they could just hit me up at dan@kickcharge.com. And certainly at kickcharge.com too, if they fill out the contact form, you know, the team here would be able to get in touch with them. A lot of times, you know, it goes through, you know, the salespeople, and then they'll send me information about that client or ask me if it's a logo I think I can work with. And then if I need to have a conversation with the client about that specific logo or whatever, you know, I can certainly do that.
Wonderful. Well, listen, thanks for being such a kick-ass dude in the home services space with these. I mean, literally, I think the best wraps I've ever seen have come from Kick Charge Creative. And I don't just say that because, you know, we have mutual customers and I have, you know, customers that are listening. It's legit how I feel. I mean, if you, for those who are just listening and can't see, he's actually got a bunch of the trucks he's wrapped behind him on the video. And some of those are customers, but they're phenomenal. It's just next level. And I will leave you guys with this. Don't ignore it. Don't mix up logo versus brand. All right. If you have questions on what's the difference, what the hell to look at, and you don't even want to talk to Dan, go to his YouTube channel. He's got a YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and type in Kick Charge Creative and watch some of his videos, and he'll give you some more information, because certainly you can't remember everything we just talked about, even if you go back and listen to it. But if you heard him, it's okay. It's actually, you should be different. Set yourself apart is what I heard him say multiple times from your competitor, because you're all doing the same thing. You throw a condenser unit on your truck, you're just like everybody else who does heating and air conditioning. All right, make yourself different, be unique. Less is more, I believe, is something like kind of the path you're going on the wraps. Like, less is more in regards to, don't put a bunch of shit on your vehicles. Make it simple, make it easy. If they go flying by you, did you understand what they do? And listen, I by no means am a creative, like I can't draw. My writing is terrible. I can't build websites, which, you know, that's why I hire people smarter than me. Well, the company does a phenomenal job. My designers can crush it. They build phenomenal websites that produce, but I'm not a brand guy, and that's a difference. There is a difference there. And I do believe if you marry the two together, it 100% is the absolute best outcome, no matter what. If it's word of mouth, referrals, TV, radio, it all comes back to that hub, which is your brand. So if you don't know, now you know. So, Dan, thank you so much for being on here, brother. I really appreciate you. Tall Paul, thanks for asking some super thoughtful questions. Listeners, hopefully you got a lot out of this. Again, you can always reach out to us directly, too, if you want to us to put you in touch with Dan. We'd certainly be happy to do that. But, Dan, appreciate you being on here, brother.
Thanks for having me, guys. This is awesome.
Awesome. Okay, until next time, listeners. Oh, by the way, quickly, and I will mention this again on some of the other future podcasts because we're super proud of it, but to all of our listeners, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for helping us hit number 32 overall on the Apple Marketing Podcast in the United States of America. And to our Australian listeners, which we apparently have a lot of, we hit 45th overall marketing podcast in Australia to the Aussies. So thank you so much. We are so absolutely grateful for that. Until next time, keep listening and keep kicking ass.
Thank you for listening to The Point. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please consider leaving us a review in the App Store. And don't forget to share with your friends. Till next time, kick some ass.
Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show. So stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.